Words to Mouth, Show Number 9, May 2nd, 2008. Today, Peter Bowerman, author of The Well-Fed Writer and The Well-Fed Self-Publisher. Welcome to Words to Mouth, an author interview talk show where readers meet authors beyond the printed page. I'm your host, Carrie, and I produce this show to introduce you to authors and the books they write. This is a companion to my blog website at wordstomouth.com, where I post daily written interviews along with this weekly podcast and offer you the chance to win free books. My guest today is Peter Bowerman, author of a number of books, most notably The Well-Fed Writer and The Well-Fed Self-Publisher. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Mary.
Not all of our listeners are writers, so I want to make a quick point that much of what we talk about can actually relate to working as a self-employed person in many regards. But why don't you start out with just telling us what commercial writing actually is and a little bit about your background and how you got into the business of commercial writing?
Well, I came out of a sales background, sales and marketing, and of course, a lot of people who see that I had, know that I'd been successful, say, "Oh, well, no wonder you were so successful. You had this, long sales and marketing career." And there's no question that it helped me get going. But what I like to kind of make clear to people is that I had no writing background. I had no writing experience. No writing training. I had never written anything for money before I got into this field. So I think that kind of shows that, the sales helped, but writing, if you have some writing background, you're going to be ahead of the game. I realized after reading a book by a gentleman named Bob Bly, who's kind of an icon in the freelance writing field, many years ago, that there was this field called commercial writing, and I had never even didn't even know that it existed, where companies actually hire people to from the outside to help execute their different creative needs, whether it's marketing brochures, ad copy, newsletters, direct mail, speeches, web content. I mean, basically anything that a company would have to create in order to do business. And it has to be done somehow. And there's only two ways that it'll get done. It'll get done in-house or it'll be farmed out. And while most companies do it in-house, the economies favor, especially smaller companies, favor the strategy of farming it out.
Well, how did you take me to that moment when you decided to be on your own as a commercial writer and maybe tell us a little bit about your first project? Do you remember?
Well, actually, that's funny. Everybody, I get that question a lot. You tell us about your first project. And I know this is going to sound really strange, but I really don't remember what my first project was. And I know that should probably be etched in my brain forever and ever, but I mean, I could probably tell you what some of my early projects were. But after reading this book, I kind of didn't do anything about it for a year or so. But I was in sales, and as I explained in my first book, my last sales job was a salesperson, the video dating service.
Right.
And so, I was 35 years old, and I said to myself, I'm better than this. I can be doing more with my life than this. And I was steeped in this whole mind thing about going into the commercial writing field. And so it was as if all roads were leading to this point. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like, you've always said you wanted to be a writer. You didn't want to starve at it, and that's true. I never was interested in just eking out a living as a writer. Mm-hmm. This is a field that you can do that in. And so I went for it, and that was in January of 1994, and I made about 1,000 phone calls in the first couple months, which, of course, is probably a terrifying idea to a lot of people out there. But
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Yeah. That is terrifying, and I think because, especially if you don't have the formal training in writing, there's a little bit, and I know for myself, there's a little bit of a challenge as to actually say those words, I am a writer, because you don't have those credentials behind your name. You can have the gift and the talent to do it, but until you get that portfolio build up, it's a little intimidating to pick up the phone and, do do that cold calling that you have to do to get the business.
Yeah, and a couple of things about what you said. You're right, and there is that moment of trying to own, you know, this new identity that you have.
Right.
But something to keep in mind, and this is, you know, this is actually one of the key strategies that I suggest to people who are getting into this business, is that you leverage what you know. And so I have a lot of, you know, a lot of people who've read my books came out of, say, you know, they were attorneys and they hated practicing law, and now they help law firms market their business.
Right.
Because the law firm's a business like any other. I have engineers, scientists, teachers, you know, financial people, you know, people who came out of healthcare, high tech, telecom, whatever.
Right.
And they may not have a lot of writing background, although they usually, if they're in this field, it's because they like to write and they know they're good at writing. They probably have some stuff that they wrote in past jobs. But to that person that they would be contacting for work, it's a huge plus that that person comes out of their industry and understands their industry and understands the, you know, the culture and the vernacular and the,
exactly,
and the kinds of projects. You know, in many cases, some of these people are going back to their own companies and saying, hey, you know, who better to help you write this stuff than someone who knows it all? So in a sense, that's what I did by leveraging my sales and marketing background. I had a pathetic portfolio. I show this portfolio at when I do talks, and it always, people always get a chuckle out of it, and there's always sort of palpable relief in the room.
Right.
when people see it, because they're like, oh my God, you know, this is like nothing. But I kind of, it was like a decoy. You know, I have a sales and marketing background, and I'm saying, don't look at my portfolio. Look at this. And the companies, most companies understand the value of sales and marketing. So if you can say, you know, I came out of this world, and I know how to write to sell, and I understand audience, and blah, 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 that speaks to them. And
right.
So they're more likely to, you know, to give you a shot. So.
Well, tell me about how, when did, what inspired you to write The Well-Fed Writer?
Well, I was originally, it's funny, I never had any intention of writing a book. I was collecting notes about my different experiences as I went, with an eye towards doing seminars at some point. For some reason, I thought that would be kind of cool. And it is. And at some point, I looked at what I had collected, and it was about 80 or 90 pages worth of stuff on a computer screen, and I said, wow, I've got enough to write a book here. And so that's kind of how it unfolded. And that was at about the two-year mark, 2 years after I'd gotten into business. Now, what do you know after 2 years? Not much. I mean, you know some. But so I took literally the next 5 years to gather more experiences, keep track of them, and put them all down, and so that I had a much richer perspective about
right.
the business. And then I chose to self-publish. I never really pursued the conventional publishing route, except with, you know, sort of half-heartedly. And I don't even know why I went that way. But it, a lot of it simply comes down to I joke about just being a control freak. I like to stay in control. And the self-publishing does indeed help you stay in control of the process. And, you know, the creative process and the timetable, and you keep the rights and you keep most of the profits, and the only major downside, of course, is that you're funding the whole effort.
Right.
But anyway, I don't think maybe.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Well-Fed Writer. I wanted to ask
yeah.
you, you know, that book was basically my commercial writing Bible when I started out. You know, it tells you everything from all the, you know, everything, how, why, when, helpful information about how to price jobs, you know, contracts, I mean, everything that you could need to know about it. And then now you've also have a companion book called The Well-Fed Writer Back for Seconds.
Correct.
How's that book different from the original book?
The first book, and I'm delighted that it gave you all that good information. So.
That's great.
The Back for Seconds is a lot more marketing. And I pull in stories from a lot of other people. The original Well-Fed Writer was pretty much my story. And I got a lot of email and questions. And, you know, I'm a I'm an at-home mom, you know, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I live in a small town, you know, I can't do this business full-time. I have to start part-time. So all these things I was hearing from people that were different from my circumstances and that I couldn't speak to. So I found people who had those experiences and could speak to them. And so it's a much richer book, but it is a companion volume. I have a little starburst right on the front cover that says 95% new content. It's, you know, not a revised edition. So there's a lot more marketing, and I answer a lot of questions that came up after the first book. And there's a lot of other voices. So there's chapters on, you know, building the business part-time, and there's chapters on building it in a small town, and different avenues other than just, you know, corporations, big and small. I mean, I get into the whole idea of very smaller, you know, smaller businesses, universities and nonprofits, and a lot of these I hadn't worked with or hadn't worked with much, so I found people who were experts,
right,
you know, in these areas and had them kind of weigh in with their story. So it's a pretty cool book. And then, of course, I'm working on the updated version of the Well-Fed Writer right now, which will encompass both books into one. So when it's all said and done, I will just have the one, but it'll be pretty juicy when it's all said and done. So.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is you have a great website, and you've recently incorporated blogging on your site. And I mean, there's just so much information on your website. If anybody is even thinking about going into writing, it's just, I don't think you have to go anywhere else. You've got all these resources and links to different or other resources out there in writing. And I was wondering what you thought when you were talking about these different people with their different experiences and emailing you, and specifically the stay-at-home mom in the small town, like you were mentioning. How do you think the internet has opened up jobs for people like that to be able to stay at home?
Sure. And by the way, the website, it's just wellfedwriter.com, not the wellfedwriter, just wellfedwriter.com, no dashes or spaces. So.
Yeah, you'll end up somewhere else.
Yeah, right. But, there's no question that the internet has made it much easier for really anybody in any field, anywhere, to work remotely. And commercial writing is no exception. When I wrote The Well-Fed Writer, I talked about getting out and meeting clients, because my experience was when I met a client face-to-face, I had a much better chance of getting hired by that client. And I still believe that's true. And that said, you know, people write me and say, or do I still have to, you know, meet clients? Is it that important? And it's becoming less and less important. I think I still have most of my clients locally in Atlanta, but I have a number of clients that are elsewhere. And I'm working right now. I mean, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm working with a client in Calgary on a series of ads, and I was referred to them by another colleague who didn't do that kind of work. And so we don't have to meet. We can do everything by phone and email, and it's really coming down more to clients just wanting the expertise and someone who's reliable and can get the job done. And it really doesn't matter where they are. And meetings can be time wasters, as anyone who's in corporate America can attest.
Yes.
So, there's huge opportunities, and just a side note. Sometimes people think that this discussion is also referring to online job sites, you know, like Elance or Google.com or places like that. And I do address that in the second book, and I'm going to address it even more in the updated version. While there are rare cases when a commercial freelancer has kind of drawn their line in the sand on those sites and is able to get some well-paying work, by and large, those sites are a waste of time because you've got too many writers bidding on too few projects. And there's always somebody willing to give it to do it for nothing or almost nothing.
Exactly. It's the well-paying part that, that is key. And it's a good place for people to go to start if they're just starting out to maybe build their portfolio. But you're right, I did that too. And it was like, you know, I can't do the work for what some of these people are taking
right.
it
for,
right.
You know?
And there's a lot of clients out there who will, I was going to say take advantage of people, but I don't believe they're taking advantage of people. I believe they're just trying to find the best deal. And that,
right.
and that's actually their responsibility is to their own company is to find the best deal. But, you know, we don't have to be complicit in that if we don't want to. And the fact is, there are plenty of clients out there who understand the value of good writing and will pay well for it. And we haven't talked, I mean, to people who are new to this field, we haven't really talked too much about the going rates, but, you know, it is one of the most lucrative fields of writing, of freelance writing, because first and foremost, you're paid for all your time. You know, you might be giving that client a flat fee estimate, but it's based on adding up all the time you think it's going to take you to do this particular job and multiplying that by an hourly rate. And the hourly rates in this business on a low end in Atlanta are $50 to $60 an hour, and on an upper end can be $125, $150 or more.
Right.
So it's a very different paradigm than what you find in, say, magazine writing or journal writing or short stories.
Oh, my gosh, so different, so different.
I think that,
like you say, some people aren't real familiar, and you would think that, you know, writing a magazine article would land a pretty sum of money, but it really doesn't. I mean,
no.
You can spend hours and hours
right.
an article that, you know, if you spent the same amount of time freelancing, you know, I think you said somewhere that it's like times 75 or something like that, and it's true. It's like,
yeah,
you know, that's a place to do your creative stuff if you want. But
right. And I tell people I don't glorify this field. I don't tell people you're going to get all your creative fulfillment out of this field. But that said, there are a lot of projects that I've done that are really fun, and they're challenging, and they're interesting, and they pay really well. And if I do seminars sometimes, and people will say, I don't want to write about mortgages or you know, some software or, you know, some artificial turf or, you know, something like that. And I say, well, if somebody was paying you $75 to $80 an hour to learn about their business and to write about their business, how would you feel about that? Okay. All right. Yeah, sure.
Well, tell us about one of your most unusual projects or most fun projects that you've done.
Well, probably, you know, the one that sticks out in my mind was actually fairly early on in my career. I scripted the commemorative CD-ROM for the Korean War Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
And it involved reading, my source material was history books, and I had to go to the site and interview some people and see it taking shape and all that, and so this actually, I guess they call it a DVD now, I wrote the script about the, you know, the unfolding of the Korean War, and then the videographers took my script and went to the National Archives and pulled photos and video clips and all that to match my script, and it ended up being a very cool project. But it's so varied. I mean, I have done a zillion brochures over the years, and while that's not fascinating work, it's interesting and it pays well. I had a project recently that was very different. A retail marketing company, and I talked about this in one of my recent newsletters. A retail marketing company that helps fast food stores and convenience stores and supermarkets. They build them, they design and they build them, they help them market, marketing campaigns, things like that, was rolling out a pilot program to a supermarket chain, and it involved 150 to 200 point-of-purchase signs, displays throughout the store that needed a snappy headline and a little bit of body copy to showcase sort of a healthy meal idea or a tip or a quick meal or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I was working on site with another writer, and I was sort of the senior writer, and we just kind of sat around and concepted all day long, came up with fun little stuff, and I was being paid for, you know, every minute I was in that place at a very healthy hourly rate. And on the basis of that work, they invited me back for a second round. And then on the basis of that, I picked up even more work. And so And I've ended up billing around $15,000 with this company.
That's good stuff.
yeah. And so, you know, that's sort of the potential. I mean, I didn't love the idea of having to work on site, but it was different from sitting around in front of my computer at home. So in that sense, it was good. And of course, it made me realize how much I love to be on my own.
Right.
I mean, for all the people out there who work for the man, I know you'll hate me for saying this, but it's just kind of like, after a week there, I go, you mean people do this every day, every week, like weeks on end? They actually get up in the morning and, you know, have to put on a, you know, whatever and get into traffic?
You forget about that. I did that actually this past year. I went back to a full-time position and after a year decided, you know what, I mean, the job was great, my boss was great, but I just, it's a completely different lifestyle.
And it's just, I'm unemployable at this point.
Right.
I really am. For those, interestingly, and speaking of, we spoke a minute ago about this new blog I started, which is just wellfedwriter.com/blog, one of the posts, and I haven't actually posted that much because the comments have been so rich and juicy that I didn't want to, you know, start a new one until the old one was sort of tapped out. But one of the posts that I made recently was, why do you love the freelance life? And for those people who are kind of in the corporate world or trying to make their getaway, you might enjoy that post, because we had at last count we had 51 comments on that particular post. So.
Yeah, I just pulled it up. I saw 51. That's great.
So yeah, and it's just really cool stuff that people are sharing, and it's just it's neat.
Well, are you willing to share one of your biggest failures and how you learn from that?
Biggest failures. Oh, I never fail, Carrie.
I didn't think so.
Everything I do succeeds beyond my wildest expectations.
That's why we're buying your book, right?
Exactly. That's right. All those other people fail.
We can come back.
Well, you know, there's. I wouldn't call it failures as much as. Are we talking about within the context of this career that I'm in now, or?
I don't know. You can
mistakes I've made, or
however you want to answer the question.
Yeah, I guess I tend to be a fairly I think things through beforehand, and so most of the risks I take are fairly calculated. But one of the things early on, you know, when I started my commercial writing business, I tended to put companies, big companies, on a pedestal as if, oh wow, I could never work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was some rarefied air in there, and you had to be this incredible, just super copywriter in order to actually make it into the inner sanctum. And, you know, I found out that that's not really the case, and I ended up getting in the door for a lot of these companies through graphic designers who were already in the door, and something happened with their writer, and they said, hey, do you by any chance know a good writer? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do, which is, by the way, one of my key strategies. I tell people, form some good alliances with graphic designers, because it's the gift that keeps on giving, in a sense.
Yeah.
So oftentimes when I'm asked if you could give people one piece of advice, I'd say, don't put these big companies on a pedestal. Don't think you're not smart enough to make a difference for them. And obviously, the more experience you have and the better writer you are, you know, the more that's going to help. But And I would say that same thing about book publishing. I think a lot of people put publishers on a pedestal. They think that's the holy grail, if I can just get a publisher. And as Wolfed Self-Publisher talks about, publishers, not because they're evil, greedy people, but just because of the economies of, you know, how the economics of the business, they can't do an optimal job for your book, and they make a lot of mistakes. And there, you can do a lot of this stuff better yourself. And so a lot of people find out to their unpleasant surprise that publisher that they were so hopeful about, they end up not making any money. And so a lot of it is just trust yourself to be better than you think you are.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because I think that's one of the things that I struggled with when I got into writing. I thought, well, I can't approach certain companies. And so just hearing you say that is really, that's great because I would have never thought you would have had those feelings. So, well, and it's just working through that. It's working past that fear. Everybody obviously has that insecurity and it's just working, you know, through it and taking on some projects that you might think you're not necessarily qualified to do. You know, I mean, I know that you have a section in your book that talks about when to say no, when, you know, to turn down projects. I remember reading something about that.
Right. Well, I actually had something about that on my blog, and that was got a lot of interesting quotes on that as well. But yeah, I think what a lot of people don't realize, or they don't kind of think it through, is that the clients you're dealing with, for the most part, they're just people. They're hardworking. And they're often ill-suited to their jobs. They're overextended in many cases. They're not necessarily any smarter than you are. Although, you know, I'm not trying to say that all of corporate America is filled with idiots. There are plenty of them in corporate America, but there's also a lot of very smart people. But again, if you're smart and you're a quick study and you can pick things up, and that's really the key, is the ability to step into a new situation. And I'm not talking about something highly technical. I don't get into highly technical because it just makes me an unhappy person.
Right.
So, but I'm talking about just if you understand the fundamentals of sales and you understand audience and you understand features and benefits and, you know, USP, which means unique selling proposition, what's special about this company that you can highlight. And if you understand some of these basics, which I do, by the way, kind of give a crash course on in the second book. It's just not hard to play in this arena. The hard work comes in getting yourself in front of those people, the marketing that's involved in getting there. But once you get there, you know, it's not that difficult.
Right. Well, talk to us a little bit about the Well-Fed Self-Publisher. Why did you write this book?
Well, a couple of reasons. And I won't lie to you and tell you that money didn't have anything to do with it. Obviously, I've been very successful with the first two books on a relative basis. And this was kind of the promotional copy that I created for the Well-Fed Self-Publisher. My first two books, I have 52,000 copies in print, and they've given me a full-time living for, at this point, almost 6 years.
Mm.
And so that's an atypical scenario for a self-publishing initiative. And I thought there's a lot of people out there who would love to, given how hard it is to get published these days, given how hard it is to become profitable even if you do get published these days, I just knew there was a lot of people who would be open to what in essence would be a blueprint for profitable self-publishing. And that's really the key. There's a lot of books out there on self-publishing, the actual process of getting a book into print. There's not as many books on self-publishing profitably,
okay.
Actually making a living from it, which I think that's kind of the whole point. Why go through the whole exercise just so you can have a garage full of books?
Right.
That doesn't help anybody. So I just felt like there was a need out there, And the book has sold well. It hasn't. I don't have 50,000 copies in print, but it's doing fine. And I added another product to it, which is kind of an interesting sort of part of the equation that I explain to people. A really good business model for someone who is marketing books or self-publishing books is to have that book as a base and then spin off different things from it. And in this particular case, I took. While I was putting the book together, I was looking at my computer and I realized that I had all this marketing material that I had created in the course of successfully publicizing and promoting my first two successful books. And I was originally going to try to fit all that into the book, and I thought, well, for one, it would make it about a 400-something page book, and number two, I thought, you know, this is worth something. There's some value here showing exactly all of the pieces that I created, how I created them. You know, what exactly they were to begin with, and how I created them, and why you'd need them, and when you'd use them, that kind of thing. And I created a separate ebook, and I sell that ebook along with the hard copy book, And for an additional $20, and it's 100 pages long, and I get emails back from people saying, you are so undercharging for this thing, and which is, you know, which is great, but I wanted it to be an impulse item. And so the whole idea is that if I had taken that book to a publisher, I might be making 80 cents, maybe a dollar a book. Self-publishing it and then adding this product to it, and 65, 70% of the people who buy the book off the site will buy this, what I call the Biz in the Box ebook along with it. And my costs, hard costs, to get that hard copy book and, you know, produced and printed and delivered to that person is about $5.
Wow.
So in a $20 book by itself, right there I'm making a $15 net, roughly. Maybe 14, 14 and a half, depending. But if I add this other thing to it, given that it's an ebook, it's pure profit.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden this $40 sale has a $34, $35 profit. And so this is the potential. Now I'd have to sell literally 35 times as many books through a publisher to make that same amount of profit that I'm making on this one.
Wow.
So, and a lot of my sales these days, I'm noticing, and I sell that Biz in the Box by itself for $30, and I get a steady stream of those, which is wonderful. I mean, you open up your email and ding, you know, you've just made $30, and you haven't had to do anything.
You and you were asleep.
Anything. You don't have to, you know, inventory anything. You don't have to, all you got to do is, you know, thank you.
That's great.
So it's a different paradigm than what a lot of people are used to when they think of publishing, and I think it's a pretty good business model.
Well, talk a little bit about the cons of self-publishing. What are the drawbacks?
Did you say the kinds of self-publishing?
Cons.
Oh, the cons. Okay.
Drawbacks.
Well, obviously, the biggest con of self-publishing is that you're funding the whole effort, and you know it can be a sizable undertaking. It can be 8,000 to 15,000, 20,000, depending on, you know, how many books you have and how long it is and all that. But I don't see a lot of con. I mean, let's, well, you know, another possible con is you go with a publisher, they're more likely to get you into bookstores. Well, some people think that bookstore sales are not worth the time. I mean, I frankly do pretty well in the bookstores, but if you've got a book that appeals to a particular audience that you can reach through targeted email, or not an email, but internet marketing, you can often bypass the bookstores and have people coming, you know, directly to your site and buying directly. And if you're willing to get out there and do events and things like that, I mean, obviously all those sales are, but yeah, but publishing companies can get you into bookstores.
Do you think this is better, self-publishing is better for niche book authors like you as opposed to fiction writers?
Yeah, there's no question that fiction is harder, but fiction is harder for any scenario. It's really difficult for a fiction writer to get published by a publisher because there's just so much of it out there. And with fiction, people... obviously, you have new authors coming online and, you know, and making a name for themselves. But by and large, mass market fiction is driven by names. Mm-hmm. When you walk into a bookstore, if you walk into a Barnes & Noble and you see the latest book from Stephen King or Nora Roberts or John Grisham or whatever, what's going to be in the biggest size font on the front cover?
Right.
It's going to be the author's name. It's not going to be the title. And mm-hmm. So... That's something that works against fiction authors. That said, I've had people, and it makes sense, given that my marketing approach is very much internet-based, and it's based on the premise that if you can zero in on your target audience by finding websites and web-based newsletters, whatever, associations, whatever, that cater to your audience, you'll get a much better reception from those entities than you would if you're trying to reach mainstream media with a press release,
right?
Kind of thing.
And well, and, you know, I interviewed Kate Jacobs, who wrote Friday Night Knitting Club and Comfort Food, and which, you know, are both novels, and she actually got on some of these internet sites. I don't know. There a lot of moms are out there, and there's knitting clubs and things. And she got a huge following that way. And actually, I don't know if that's necessarily the way that Julia Roberts, you know, it landed on her desk, but she's now making a movie out of this book. And so, the internet is really amazing.
Yeah, and I guess what I was getting at is that the more focused the more niche and genre-driven your fiction is, i.e. if it's romance or horror or mystery or whatever, there are so many sites out there that would cater to people who like that kind of book, as opposed to more general fiction that's, you know, that could appeal to anybody.
Right.
That's where it gets a little bit more difficult. So while I don't claim, and I actually even have a caveat, you know, in the book saying, I don't claim that this is going to work the same way for fiction as it will for nonfiction. I have had a lot of fiction writers say, I know you say that in your book, but, you know, let me tell you, a lot of the stuff you're talking about in here absolutely applies to fiction writers. So I'm not going to go on record as saying, oh, yes, this is the book for you if you're a fiction writer. But you will learn some things.
Well, I know that you need to go. I just wanted to open it up. If there's anything else that you'd like to sort of leave with the listeners about freelance writing and self-publishing.
Just that it's very doable. I kind of look back on what I've done, and I don't consider, I think I'm a pretty smart guy. I don't consider myself particularly like a workaholic or anything. and I managed to accomplish a good bit, so I think it's very doable. And so I would really encourage people. And I think the two fields are very complementary. By making the money that I made in commercial writing, it gave me the time and the space and the money to fund this adventure to write the books and then produce the books and then actually market them.
And again, you have seminars that you put on for people interested in the business.
Yeah, I haven't done too many lately. I did some locally here. I don't do too many like around the country anymore because they're just kind of too hit or miss. I'm going to start.
You heard it here. Now you said it.
Exactly. I'm going to start doing some teleclasses soon on different subjects.
I think that's a great idea.
It's a good business model, and it's got low overhead. Let's give them those emails or the website addresses again. It's just wellfedwriter.com, and then the website for the Wellfed Self-Publisher, which also links from the Wellfed Writer, is wellfedsp, as in self-publisher, wellfedsp.com. And on Wellfed Writer, you can sign up for a newsletter for free, and you can sign up for my blog.
And again, there are so many resources on your site, so I encourage people to go check that out. And I will definitely put the links on my website with this podcast.
Cool.
So I really appreciate your time, and
hey,
I hope
no problem. Thank you for asking me.
No problem. I appreciate it. Okay, you have a good day.
You do the same.
All right, Peter. Bye bye. Okay, as I said, I'll put direct links to both Peter's websites and books on wordstomouth.com. He has been truly generous in offering two great giveaways. One will be a combined book package of The Well-Fed Writer and The Well-Fed Self-Publisher. And the second is The Well-Fed Self-Publisher with the Biz in a Box that he talked about, the ebook and CD. To be entered in this giveaway, please leave a comment on my site under the interview and pop me a quick email with your contact information citing Peter Bowerman's name. Leave a review about the show on iTunes. And I wanted to take the opportunity to thank Supermom Times 3 and New Jersey _Ed. You know who you are, and I just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your crazy busy days to leave me a review. 5 stars at that. I especially appreciate Supermom's comment about me not trying to be something that I'm not, because I struggle with that a little bit. Am I a professional broadcaster? Heck no. Have I published my own book? No. I've ghostwritten a few, but really, I just love to write and read and encourage other authors, so I'm glad that comes across, and I appreciate you guys both giving me some feedback. And thanks to Anne and Sally for your commenting on my site. It really helps me out to get the feedback from you guys, and I know the authors appreciate it, so keep those comments coming. I sent out all the books to the winners except Rochelle and Tina. Where are you, girlfriends? You need to respond to my email and give me your addresses. Your books are waiting for you. Don't make me stalk you. Okay. soon, I'll be posting the winners to the advance copies of Kate Jacobs' new novel, Comfort Food, along with matching totes and some other great books, including Peter's. So get your name in for the drawings right now. And if you are a published author or publicist and are interested in having a book spotlighted on Words to Mouth, there are details on my website. You can get Words to Mouth delivered free to your computer simply by subscribing to iTunes. So take a minute and do that, and you won't have to worry about missing a show in the future. Thank you to Natalie Brown for her song, You Gotta Believe, from the PodSafe Music Network. Let me know what you think. Over at the DivaCast, we love Natalie's song, Queen of Me. And though I thought about using a different artist, I just love her sound, and You Gotta Believe is just really inspiring to me. So let me know what you think about that song. And thanks, Natalie. As always, you can call me at 206-309-7318. Thanks again, and take good care until next time. Keep on going.